If you're going to be interviewing midwives, you'd better have some good questions to ask. Listen to this list and the reasons for each question.
I tell the honest stories behind the facade of women's issues, alternative health, and life in general. As a retired midwife, I no longer have a horse in the race of healthcare. Covering birth, death, parenting, and the female experience, whatever that is and however that looks. If it happened to someone who identifies as female, it's fair game. Welcome to my show, Midwife Talks. I'm Lindy Casey, retired midwife. I discuss anything and everything, but mostly women's health, crunchy stuff, and birth stories.
I've lost count of how many times a new client came to me and had no questions, none. I created a list of questions that I'd whip out and tell them we're going to go over them together, and then they should take that list with them to ask the next midwife they interviewed. These are those questions. They're pretty general. You might have some that are specific to you, so add what's important to you. But these questions are the very least you should be asking. If you want a printed copy, I'll give the details on how and where later in this episode. What is your background, training, and experience? Midwives come into the career from lots of different backgrounds and routes. Training can vary greatly between midwives, and experience is what happens after training. First, let's talk about background. The midwife might say her background or reason for becoming a midwife is she had a bunch of babies and attended some births of her friends and decided she could be a birth worker. Or her background might be that she started out as a registered nurse and went on to get advanced training in midwifery. There are no right answers or wrong answers. The answers that meet your needs are right for you. As far as training goes, most midwives nowadays have some sort of formal training. Back when I first started, midwives came into the field through an apprenticeship. They usually worked under the supervision of a more experienced midwife and got their education on the fly on their own, kind of developing what they needed to learn in the moment. Now, midwives are usually trained through an educational process. If it's important for you to have a midwife that knows some medical things that ordinarily would not be something she'd encounter at births in the home setting, you probably want a midwife who's been trained through a formal education system with a credential like certified nurse midwife. For some home birth midwives, the training looks a little different. They might have earned the title certified professional midwife, or they may not have any credentials. Some people also refer to these non-nurse midwives as lay midwives, but that's not really accurate. A lay person is someone with no training or special expertise. Just because a person hasn't received formal training through a recognized educational process doesn't mean they aren't trained or have no understanding of their work. While non-nurse midwives might know how to put in IVs, understand and give various medications, and suture perineal tears, they generally don't do those things under ordinary circumstances. As far as experience goes, midwives don't necessarily have tremendous experience when they first start out. The threshold used to be for certified nurse midwives to have managed 25 births on their own under supervision before they could become licensed. I'm not sure what it is now, but it's probably still pretty low. Midwives who've had a lot of experience might seem like a better choice, but that's not necessarily true. They might be jaded or tired or simply not have empathy anymore. They might be extremely busy and always on call. Burnout is a real thing. It's not unusual to interview a midwife and find that she claims to have attended thousands of births. The first thing you have to remember is that there is a limit to what an independent midwife can do. If she says she's attended 1,000 births and she's only been in practice for 5 years, that's 200 births a year. 200 births a year is a lot of births for an independent midwife. That's 16 a month. 16 births a month would be almost impossible for one midwife to accomplish without a partner or support staff. Even if she has a partner, if she attends 16 births a month, she probably has no life outside of midwifery. If a midwife says she's attended 1,000 births over 16 years, that's about 5 births a month, and that would be a reasonable number of births for a midwife to have attended on her own. It's important to also understand that she might be including births she attended without having an active role, or many births that she attended at one time in another country. Midwife students used to be able to go to other countries, usually very poor countries, and work for free, or they'd even pay to work there at a birth center or a hospital. They'd attend a lot of births in a very short period of time. That can be positive, or that can be negative. We used to say that the training will present itself when the experience is required, which means that if you find that you have 5 births in a row with cord around the neck, you'll be reading up on everything you can on how anybody has ever handled cord around the neck. You can be pretty sure that the universe is training you on how to handle cord around the neck. But when you're in a situation where there's just a ton of births happening at a clinic in another country, you can't really talk to those people in their language, and you don't have the time to spare on one subject. I really think that you're missing a huge component of midwifery care, which is the ability to meet the needs of the client in her language, both physical and spoken, and to let your training develop in a way you can retain. How many births have you attended as the primary caregiver since the completion of your training? This is just another way of asking about experience. Is that reality? Are those numbers even possible? Unfortunately, a lot of midwives outright lie about their education, experience, and the number of births they've attended. So write down her answer and crunch those numbers and see if it makes sense to you that somebody could have attended that many births in that amount of time. Why did you become a midwife? There are lots of different reasons why women become midwives. I say women because the majority of midwives are women. Often in talking with other midwives, what I've heard is that they chose to be a midwife because they had a bad birth experience of their own. And that's a valid reason. That experience can make a person very passionate about changing the way things are done. Sometimes they come into midwifery from a different route. I know at least 2 midwives who were searching for something they could do as self-employment and discovered that there was a short-term educational process they could go through or absolutely no certification requirement in that state, and they chose midwifery as that self-employed option. And that's valid too. You might think that that seems like a really sleazy reason for someone to choose to become a midwife, but the truth is that to maintain a midwifery practice, to keep being a midwife, takes dedication to the work that you can't fudge, you can't lie, and you can't fake. Now that we've talked about the midwife's experience and her education, let's go on to what your experience of birth should be. Here's a question. Do you encourage family or partner participation? Any caregiver who says they really don't like it when family or partners or your friends come in while you're in labor or hang out while you're giving birth is someone to avoid. It's your birth, and you should be the decider of who's going to be there, who's going to be talking to you, who's going to be providing support. That's absolutely vital. This also goes for hospitals, especially in the age of COVID and other viruses that are sweeping the world. If a hospital says you can't have your husband in there, or you can only have one person with you, this is not a good situation for you. You don't know how you're going to handle labor, even if you've had babies before. You might want to have 10 people in the room with you, or you might not want anyone with you. But that should be your choice, not theirs. What is your expectation of me regarding self-care and pregnancy? Well, a lot of caregivers, and I'm including doctors in this, believe that they're giving care. They believe that they are the ones who are providing you with a service that ensures your health. Nothing could be further from the truth. Only you can provide your care. Your caregiver is actually providing you with information and resources for you to be able to provide your own care. For instance, if a care provider says you need more protein in your diet, they aren't going to be with you at the table every time you sit down to eat. You're the one who has to decide if you're going to eat this or that or the other thing. You're the one who decides if you're going to drink more water or get better sleep or take a walk every day. So a good provider should tell you that you're expected to do the very best you can within your abilities to eat right and do all the things that we know contribute to a healthy birth outcome. This next question is about how to contact the midwife. Do you use a beeper or cell phone? If not, how do I reach you? Are you on call 24 hours a day? Does a service like a phone answering service answer your phone, or is it a direct line to you? One of the things that I hear from women all the time is how frustrating it is to try and get hold of their doctor. They call the number they were given and that goes to a service and the doctor doesn't call them back. Or there's a recording that says, call the hospital OB nurse's desk and ask your question of them. You'll probably get an answer, but that answer won't be from somebody who knows you and knows your situation. It's going to be a really generic answer that's kind of the average of what's expected or what might concern a typical pregnant person, not specific to you. When you go into labor, you want to be able to call your care provider and not have to call a phone answering service to get a message to your care provider. If you're having a hospital birth, it isn't out of the ordinary to call the hospital, talk to a nurse, and have the nurse tell you it's time to come in. That's because when you get to the hospital, the nurses will be the ones taking care of you. Your doctor won't be coming in until the nurses tell them it's time for you to be seen by a doctor. So that kind of makes sense. But if you're seeing a midwife, you should be able to reach that midwife directly. And although this is one of the things that contributes to midwifery burnout, your midwife should be available to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If she goes on vacation or she takes off call time, she should convey that information to you very clearly and give you an alternative number to call so that you're not left hanging with nobody to talk to about whatever your concerns are. Do you have a limit on the number of births you attend every month? As I pointed out earlier, to attend 16 births a month is a lot, and something's going to suffer. Either the midwife's going to suffer and have no life, or the clients will suffer because she simply can't be available to them in the way that most people have come to expect midwifery care to provide. A reasonable number of births is anywhere from an average of 1 to 2 a month to as many as 8. Less than 12 a year, and she's probably not growing in experience. I think that once you get over 8 a month, unless the midwife has a partner, and they switch back and forth between who's on call, it's difficult to meet the needs of the clients. What would happen if you had 2 births occur at once? This would be much more likely if the midwife was extremely busy. When I worked in Las Vegas, my partner and I attended almost every birth together, but when we did have 2 labors happening at the same time, we split up. One midwife went to one client, and the other midwife went to the other client. In this way, our ladies saw a familiar face, a midwife that they knew and trusted and was familiar with them. I can only imagine how hard it would be to go into labor and call your midwife to discover that she's at another birth, and she's going to call her backup midwife to come to you, and you've never even met that midwife. It would be as distressing as going to a hospital and having all of those nurses there be complete strangers, which, coincidentally, is exactly what happens every time a woman goes to the hospital to have her baby. Going along with this is a question of, have you ever missed a birth? It would be a rare midwife who has never missed a birth. One thing I've always told my clients when I've gone over how to handle labor is that they should hope that they're so comfortable laboring that they don't need me in their space for hours upon hours. That's not for me. That's for them. To have the midwife at your birth for a long time can interfere in your ability to surrender or relax. If you listen to the podcast I just did on Chelsea and Rick, you might notice that Chelsea, on at least 2 different occasions, said to her birth team, "I'm sorry this is taking so long," or some variation of that. She said, "I feel like I've wasted your whole day." Well, it is absolutely not true that a long labor is wasting a midwife's day or causing her some inconvenience. The discomfort the mother might feel in that situation is vital. It's so important. At some point during the prenatal period, a midwife should go over some strategies for labor and birth. It might have different names or it might involve some mind games, but basically, you should ignore it as long as you possibly can. When you can't ignore it any longer, distract yourself from labor. When you find even distraction impossible, surrender to the process. And at that point of surrender, that's when you should absolutely call the midwife. You should also call the midwife before that if you feel like you need for her to be there. I've always told my clients to call me whenever they want, and when they want me to be there with them, I will come. I trust women to understand and know what's going on with their bodies. And if I get there and her labor is slow and doesn't really seem like much is going on, I just go into a corner and read a book. I don't worry about how long it's taking. I don't care for myself, only for them. But if I had 5 other ladies do, that would be a different situation because I'd be concerned that those other women might need my services before this one particular slow birth was done. Births I've missed generally happen because the lady was so comfortable or her labor happened so fast that she didn't call me until later in labor. Other considerations, of course, are weather and distance. The midwife doesn't necessarily live in her office. Some midwives do work out of their homes, but other midwives, myself included, did not. And so the lady might have thought she was calling her to come from the place where her office is. But in reality, the midwife was sleeping in her home, which was some distance from that location. And it'll take her a little longer to get there. Snowstorms, rainstorms, 100-year floods, car accidents, and flat tires are all some of the things I've encountered on my way to births. And some of them caused me to miss a birth. Do you work with a partner or assistants? Most midwives try to work with a partner or an assistant. If a double emergency where both the mother and the baby need special care happens, the partner or assistant can work on one person while the midwife is working on the other person. But lots of midwives work completely alone. Generally, they go over emergency procedures with the partner or other people who will be attending the birth beforehand so that if the midwife needs their help, they understand how to do that. Do you provide postpartum visits in the early days after birth? And if so, how many and how long do you provide that postpartum care? Where is that care provided? It's pretty standard for a midwife to provide a certain amount of postpartum care after the birth. Some midwives might require the new mother to come into the office where she had her prenatal appointments, or the midwife might go to her house or other location where the birth occurred. Generally, it would be expected that the midwife would see you in a few days after the birth. One of the things that can be done at that appointment is to fill out the birth certificate if it wasn't done actually at the birth, and also to do the metabolic screening test on the baby. It's also a good idea to make sure breastfeeding is established at that point and the baby is thriving. After that first appointment, the next appointment quite often is about a week or 10 days after the birth, and if everything is going well, the midwife might not see you again until 6 weeks after the birth, at which point she makes sure everything is going well and says, "See you next time." Other midwives might see a lady more frequently after a birth. They might see them every week. I've known midwives who came every other day. It all depends on the midwife, so this is an important question to ask. What equipment and supplies do you bring to births? And what equipment do you normally use at births? This is not the same question. Midwives should have some emergency equipment and supplies that she brings to births, and the equipment that she ordinarily uses should not be those emergency supplies. A midwife who brings, for instance, IV equipment and supplies should not be using an IV at every birth. You can check on websites to discover what sorts of equipment many midwives bring, and the list is varied. Some midwives might bring oxygen. Other midwives don't. Some midwives might bring suturing material. Other midwives might send you to a doctor if you need a repair. So there's quite a long list of different ways you could look at that, and it's important that the answer to this question meets your needs and makes you feel comfortable.
Many of you know about my side gigs. I want to take a moment to talk about one of them, a little series of easy reader books I write that I'm super proud of. It's called Kids on C Street, and it's all about some children who lived on one street in one small town in the 1960s. Hashtag Boulder City, Nevada. Every book includes a list of all the words in the story and has been rated to reading level, which is usually first to third grade. I write the books for my great-grandchildren, but your kids can read them too, and I hope you'll enjoy a little wholesome trip down memory lane. You can find them on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Search for Kids on C Street by Lindy Casey.
Now this question does go along with the earlier question. What medications and equipment do you have for emergencies? You'll notice a lot of these questions are just wording the same things in different ways, and that's because the more different ways you approach a question, the more likely you are to get the full picture of what the answer is. In some states, midwives can carry medications such as Pitocin for postpartum hemorrhage, and in other states, they cannot. In those states, they might bring herbal remedies or tinctures to use in the event of a hemorrhage. I'm not going to get into whether or not I think those things work, but it's important for you to know what your midwife does and doesn't bring with her to your birth. Are you certified in CPR and neonatal resuscitation? This is the bare minimum of emergency education any midwife should have. I'll go so far as to say every parent should be well-versed in CPR, not only for adults, but also infants. Neonatal resuscitation is specific for newborn babies just right after they've been born, and it's not really something that a parent needs to have, but every midwife should certainly know how to perform neonatal resuscitation. One way you can be sure she does know is if she's certified in it. What complications have you seen and handled? Because I worked in a Mexican birth clinic that took care of a lot of undocumented people, I saw some really crazy stuff. So my experience of complications is much wider and more varied than the standard midwife. Most midwives will tell you a laundry list of just regular stuff like hemorrhage, stuck baby, cord around the neck, stalled labor, and so on. Those are probably the most common complications a midwife will see in her career. However, if you talk to a midwife and she tells you she's seen some really wild stuff, presumably she's got nerves of steel, and you want a midwife with nerves of steel. I think that one follow-up question, if your midwife does tell you about some of those complications she's seen, is to ask her, how did she react emotionally and mentally and physically? That might be a really telling answer. When you ask this next question, you will not possibly understand the answer the midwife gives. But the way she answers is important. If she's vague or she just can't immediately rattle off the steps she's taken in these situations, that could be a red flag. This is the question. How would you handle complications such as hemorrhage, cord around the baby's neck, or baby not breathing spontaneously? How she answers as far as what she would do is important, but also how she answers as far as how she behaves or her demeanor when she answers is also important. If you were to ask a doctor this question, it might be interesting to hear how that doctor responds. Would they respond with an honest answer, taking your question seriously? Or would they just sort of do a modern day equivalent of pat pat on your knee, don't you worry, little lady? Do you have adequate medical backup? Do you rely on a particular doctor or hospital? Can I choose my own physician? Generally, if you're being transferred to the hospital, it's because it's necessary. However, having said that, the majority of the transfers to the hospital that I've had were first-time moms who weren't handling labor well, like they started writing down every contraction on a notepad, and when labor got real, they just couldn't take it anymore and they wanted drugs. They're the exception to this question, because you would probably have time to decide what hospital you want to go to in those circumstances, since there's not really a true emergency. However, if you have something going on that requires you to get to a hospital fast, where a doctor will be there and there's medical staff and there are drugs and there's an operating room, it doesn't matter where you want to go. You're going to go to the nearest hospital. If you're transferred by car, you're just going to drive to the nearest hospital. If you're transferred by ambulance, they probably aren't even going to ask you. They're just going to take you to the nearest hospital that can handle your sort of situation. Some midwives have a doctor or hospital they've grown a relationship with over time, and those relationships are really important. The biggest reason why midwives absolutely hate transferring clients to a hospital isn't actually the disappointment that the home birth has not been realized. It's because midwives are treated like absolute crap when they take a client to a hospital. The client usually is not treated badly, although I have had clients be treated really horribly by the staff when they got into the hospital. One time a lady who'd had babies with me before at my birth center had her water break late in her pregnancy and she just wanted to wait around until labor started. But after a day, I said she had to come in so I could check her vitals and make sure the baby was in a good position, which I did with an ultrasound, not with an internal examination, and generally just to make sure she was safe to wait longer. After 24 hours, you start being concerned about infection and you want to monitor for it. So when she came in, although her vitals were fine and the baby sounded great, I discovered the baby was breech. Now, this baby had been cephalic or head down a week before, but the lady had had several very large babies before. Sometimes what happens when a lady has had very big babies or a lot of amniotic fluid in a previous pregnancy or even a multiples pregnancy is in a future pregnancy, the uterus just is really much roomier for the baby and he can flip around and you might see those babies late in pregnancy just flip from head down to breech or even transverse, which is sideways. There were some other conditions with this lady that made me feel she was not really a candidate for a breech birth, or at the very least not a breech birth at my birth center, which was about 15 miles away from the nearest hospital. So we made the decision to transfer to the hospital in the next town. I called them first, explained the situation, and we traveled to that hospital. At that hospital, they refused to allow me to be with my client. In fact, they didn't even allow her husband to be with her. And when they pushed her in a wheelchair down a back hallway lined with offices and lab rooms, staff came out and stood in their doorways, kind of leaning against the door jams, and crossed their arms and scowled at her. She felt very uncomfortable by this. How a client or midwife will be treated is a huge deal when considering how that midwife has gained relationships with medical personnel and facilities in the area. But you can't be best friends with every nurse and every doctor and every hospital in an area, so, as I've said before, you go to the hospital that's closest to where you are, and because of that, those relationships that midwife has formed might be completely irrelevant. However, it's important that the midwife has taken the effort to form those relationships. And those relationships might come in really, really valuable during pregnancy when you need a specific test or the midwife might have a medical question. The question of whether or not you can choose your own physician is a tricky one. The reason why is because if you have your own doctor, but you chose to not go to them, you've chosen to go to a midwife for your prenatal care and your birth, this can cause some awkwardness between you and your doctor. For one thing, most doctors think you're absolutely crazy to have a home birth. There might be some animosity on the doctor's part. But I've had people who've had doctors they loved and they had a good relationship with, that they were very upfront with about having a midwife for their birth, and they cleared it with them first to be able to go to that doctor if there was a problem. Again, if there is an emergency, you aren't necessarily going to be taken to that doctor's hospital because that might not be the closest hospital. You're going to go to the closest hospital, and because you'll go first to the emergency room and triage, you'll see the doctor on call. If your doctor has admitting privileges there, then it's possible that your doctor could be called to come in and take care of you, but don't count on that. So when you ask the midwife this question, if she says, "I always go to XYZ hospital," that's something to be concerned about. What medical complications require transport to the hospital? There's no real easy way to answer this question because there are so many different things that can come up in labor. And don't discount people just getting a feeling. I know that sounds really kind of goofy, but the reality is that sometimes the midwife will say, "I just had a feeling that something wasn't right." Or the partner of a pregnant lady will say, "I just really thought she was not acting normal and I had a feeling that something was wrong." So because of that, that might not be a medical complication on the face of it, but it might end up requiring transport to be sure that everything's okay. Some of the other reasons are no-brainers. The baby's heartbeat sounds bad in labor, or the mother's showing signs of maternal exhaustion, or some other thing along those lines. Those aren't really so much emergencies as just you just gotta go. And as I said before, the majority of the transfers to the hospital that I ever saw were first-time moms who just simply were not prepared for labor and got tired. So those aren't really medically required transfers. Midwives will usually say excessive bleeding, fetal heart tone issues, maternal exhaustion, stalled labor, infection, and malpresentations. Would you be able to continue labor support if I needed to go to the hospital? That would depend upon the hospital if they allow it, as well as the midwife if she does it. Most midwives go with their client to the hospital if they're transferred, and they stay there until the baby is born, and might even stay for a little while afterwards to make sure that breastfeeding is established. But some hospitals won't allow the midwife to be in the room with the mother. The midwife might be willing, but the hospital might not allow it. I don't know any midwives who do this, but perhaps there are some who'll say, "Nah, once you go to the hospital, I'm done, and I'm just going back to my office to continue doing prenatal appointments, or I'm going to go to bed to sleep off my sleepless night." If you're comfortable with that, that's okay. Do you do vaginal birth after cesarean or VBAC at home? If so, what's your outcome ratio? Now, there's a lot of controversy about doing VBACs anywhere, not just at home. Most doctors don't do VBACs. This has sent women who had a previous cesarean and won a vaginal birth to midwives in droves. If the midwife you're interviewing says, "Oh yeah, I do VBACs and they all have vaginal births. I haven't had one that failed," I'd be suspicious. The reason why is because not all cesareans are unnecessary. Some cesareans are absolutely lifesavers and might have been necessary because of something that could repeat itself in a subsequent pregnancy. There's really sort of a special mindset for the mom and the midwife to have a successful vaginal birth after a previous cesarean. My VBAC rate was probably about 75% overall. A couple that failed, and I'm going to say failed because I don't know how else to say it, were situations where a lady had hip dysplasia as an infant, but she was completely unaware of it. And when she was having her baby, the baby just would not descend. Another case was a lady who'd had her first baby in a military hospital where they did a cesarean, and then she was so determined to have the next baby at home she tried several more times. But she really would not take my advice to ignore, distract, surrender. She believed that she could force labor, and she walked and marched and did squats and was completely active until she was absolutely exhausted, and she just couldn't go on. I think that most of them, as I said, 75% or more, were successful. Another midwife told me once that the secret to her successful VBAC rate was to appear completely non-empathetic. By that I mean she felt empathy, but she just didn't show it. She didn't give a lot of emotional sympathy. Labor is hard, and it's a solitary journey no matter how many people are around you. And the lady who's had a previous cesarean is coming into labor with sensations that regular labor doesn't ordinarily cause. And she's carrying emotional baggage from an earlier birth she obviously wishes had turned out differently.
I know a lot of my listeners are really into doing things the natural way and being self-sufficient. My daughter Christina is the same way and had a dream of owning a farm. While the acreage she pined for didn't pan out, she began to live her dream where she was, on a city lot in the midst of a metro area. She raises chickens for eggs and manure, grows vegetables and fruits, and she preserves what she produces. You can watch what she's up to and learn some things about urban farming on her YouTube channel, Casey Urban Farm. Recently, she's covered dry canning, tomato growing, and different types of raised growing beds. I love that I can walk through her urban oasis every day and see fresh flowers, organic foods, all to the farmy sounds of a rooster crowing. Now you can too. Visit youtube.com/KCUrbanFarm to see what's growing. That's youtube.com/KCUrbanFarm, CaseyUrbanFarm.
This section is all about money. One of the most uncomfortable conversations clients have with their midwives, for whatever reason that is. First question, what is your fee and what services does it include? Which fees are separate? For instance, ask about prenatal lab work, newborn assessment, breastfeeding support, postpartum care, and birth control counseling. Some midwives charge for each office visit with a separate fee for the birth. Others charge a global fee, which includes all the prenatal visits, all of the postpartum visits, everything including the birth. But it's important to find out beforehand how much it's going to cost and what it's going to cover. What about payment plans? I had a payment plan at my birth center that required a certain amount for each prenatal appointment that would allow for the birth to be completely paid for by the 37th week. Some midwives will take payments after the birth. I didn't do that because my experience was that after the birth, people just didn't feel like it was the most important thing to make that payment every month. After all, the baby's already here. So it really depends upon the midwife, her comfort level, and her financial requirements. I've known midwives who took items for collateral and then took payments. One midwife took a diamond ring as collateral. Another took a car. So that is one thing you could consider if you really don't have enough money to pay for a midwife up front, but you really want to have a home birth. Ask her if she'll take payments or if she'll take something in collateral to hold while you make the payments for the birth. While we're talking about money, it would be a good idea for you to research basic hospital charges, such as normal and cesarean birth. That'll help you put the midwife's fees into perspective of what you might pay if you go to a doctor. This is also a money question. Do you accept reimbursements from insurance companies? If so, which ones? Insurance claims are so complicated these days that most midwives have a biller that handles those claims. And to be able to submit them, the claim has to be in the same format that any other medical claim is made in. It includes codes and terminology that you might not be familiar with. Because of that, you might be surprised at what's being billed and how it's billed and what the reimbursement is. Some insurance companies will pay for midwifery care, some require you to apply for out-of-network care, and some just absolutely do not consider it. It is less to do with the midwife as it is to do with the insurance company. What other costs might I encounter? Keep in mind that in the case of transport to the hospital or physician, any hospital fees will be additional to the fees that you pay to your midwife. Other costs that you might encounter during your birth might be lab fees or a birth kit, which includes supplies you'll need at your birth. The cost of that depends greatly upon the midwife and what she feels is necessary at your birth. Here are a few other questions you might want to ask. What religion are you? That seems like it's a really invasive question, but it might be important to you. Some Christians might feel uncomfortable having a Jewish midwife. Some atheists might not feel comfortable having a Christian midwife. It's all about the client's comfort, so this is a valid question to some people. How do you feel about LGBTQ couples? Early in my career, I saw very few people who identified as being LGBTQ. But as time has gone on, there are more people who identify that way, and their needs have to be met also. But in the case of some midwives, they have been brought to their career through a religious experience and might feel uncomfortable or even downright disdainful of people who are not straight. So as uncomfortable as this question could be, it might be important for you. What are your views on abortion? This really might seem like a weird question for a pregnant woman who's obviously planning a home birth to ask a midwife. The reason why I include this one is that a lot of women have had abortions. Nearly one out of every four women will have had an abortion by age 45. If those women feel like their care provider is judging them or looking down on them because of that, they might withhold that information. Now, withholding that information doesn't really have a whole lot of medical ramifications, since abortion is actually safer than birth, but it might have some emotional ones. And not feeling comfortable with your midwife to share something that was probably a life-changing circumstance, that can be a deal-breaker for hiring that midwife. So, did I go over your questions? If not, what did I miss? Send me your comments, and I might use them in a future episode. If you have suggestions for other questions to ask a midwife, or just any comment or question, you can text me from your phone at 715-575-9420, or message me on Instagram or TikTok. If you want a printable file of this list of questions without my commentary, include your email address.
That's all for this episode. Thanks for listening. I appreciate every one of you. And remember, if you want to support what I do, then share, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. If you have anything you'd like to add to this subject, you can be part of the conversation. Go to anchor.fm/midwife-talks and click on the message button. That's anchor.fm/midwife-talks. I'll see you in the next episode of Midwife Talks. Links to more information about the topics covered in this show can be found under the podcast tab.